This podcast is part of the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Chaz, and you're listening to my good friend Bob Main on the Handgun World Podcast. Bob carries a gun because he can't carry a cop.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Still a little bit under the weather, folks, trying to fight off some kind of bronchitis or mild flu-like symptoms or something. This has been going on a couple of weeks. I'm slowly starting to get better, but I almost decided to go to the ER and get checked out yesterday, but I got a lot of sleep and started to feel a little bit better. So forgive me if this introduction is short. I got another interview this week with Gail Pepin of the Pro Arms podcast, and I really think you're going to enjoy it. I got some voicemails recently, and thank you for being so patient, those of you that called in. I want to address these voicemails. A couple of really good ones here, and if you want to call in, 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. Let's listen to Matt from Florida.
Hey, Bob. This is Matt Wells in Florida. Not the first voicemail that I've left you, but I figured I would chime in here with one. Really enjoyed the most recent podcast. I always like hearing a podcast where a bunch of different guns or any kind of equipment are being reviewed and talked about, because it's that practical advice that we all like to hear, and we're all Googling this stuff all the time, and you don't really know who you're getting your reviews from in a lot of those cases. Or on YouTube, there's people you've never seen before or heard of that suddenly you're trusting to get a review on a certain holster or a certain gun or whatever else it might be. And, you know, you're a guy I've listened to for a while now, so I can trust your reviews. But I got to tell you, when at the end of that, when you said, which was your favorite, and I was sitting here in suspense driving around in my car, and you threw out Glock 43, and I literally out loud in my car to nobody in particular started booing to the speakers. Boo! Which I thought was funny, you know. Of course, it was in good fun, but I was going, fanboy. I always, of course, will acknowledge the efficiency and the just raw talent of what the Glock offers. But to me, it's kind of like LeBron James in the NBA. You know, I recognize the talent. I recognize that, he is who he is, but he's still not Michael Jordan, dadgummit. So the Glocks, everybody loves the Glocks. But, then you followed that up by saying that the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield would have been your primary carry if that were the choice of the guns you had. And then you redeemed yourself in my eyes, and I said, yeah, all right, good stuff, because that is, in fact, my primary carry is an M&P Shield 9. But I was curious about a couple of things. I've heard you talk about the car P380 several times before, and I'd like to add one to my arsenal eventually one day in the future when I've got some extra cash to spend. But you didn't mention, I didn't hear you talk about, I don't know if I actually heard you talk about it before, when you're talking about the Walther, you talked about the PPS. I'm curious if you've ever shot or carried the CPC, their Walther CPC the concealed carry pistol, the CCP. I've got a buddy of mine that swears by that gun, and I haven't yet had a chance to hold it or shoot it, but curious if you have or not as a concealed carry pistol. And then also, I was going to ask you about the difference in your personal opinion from the Ruger LCP to the Ruger LCP2, which you reviewed the LCP2 today and gave it a really great review. So I'm curious, in your opinion, how big of a difference or how big of a step forward they made from the original LCP. But other than that, I really appreciate and enjoyed the reviews of the different guns you talked about.
Hello, Matt. Thank you for the call. He's talking about episode 414 a few weeks ago when I reviewed a lot of small guns that I own. You know, Matt, since then I went to the range and I shot. I took three guns with me. Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, Walther PPS M2, and Glock 43. And I wanted to shoot them all extensively, about 100 rounds each. You know, you might find this interesting. I said a few weeks ago that the Glock 43 was my favorite out of the three. But in the most recent range performance, the gun that I shot the best was the Walther PPS M2. As I mentioned, it is heavier than most single stacks, and the trigger is outstanding, in my opinion, for these little single stack guns. So maybe that's one of the reasons why I shot it better. I also shot the Glock 43 better than I shot the Shield. But one reason I like the Smith & Wesson Shield is because there are a lot of ways to customize it, as well as the Glock 43. There's a lot of ways to customize that as well. There's not a lot of ways to customize the Walther PPS M2, even though out of the box it shoots great and feels great. About the only thing I'd like to do to my PPS M2 is probably to put some different sights on it, and that's it. No, I've never shot the Walther CCP. I've dry-fired one in a gun store one time. I was only mildly impressed from dry-firing it and handling it inside the gun store, but that's about all I'm going to say because I've never had a chance to shoot one of those. You know, the Walther CCP2 just seems a little bit too big for me. You know, it seems like it's a gun that when you talk about small guns that are for deep concealment, it's a little too large for what you get. That's the CCP. And like I said, even the PPS M2 is a little bit on the big side as far as I'm concerned. There's so many good small little 9mm out there that are easy to conceal. You know, like the Ruger, it would be the Ruger LC9, I believe, the LC9S, which is a real good one. I've had a chance to shoot that one. The Shields, the Glock 43s, the little, you know, smaller guns like the Kar PM9. You know, that's pretty much the gun that started all of the small single-stack 9mm craze, if you remember. That was the first small gun I ever purchased, a Kar PM9. I still highly recommend them today. Great little guns. Small, easy to conceal, quality, accurate. So when manufacturers start to make these single-stack 9s a little too big, I kind of wonder if when they make them big and heavy, because once you start getting to the size of an M&P compact or an XD compact or a mid-size Glock or even a SIG 320, things like that, once you start getting to guns that are that middle compact size, they're in many cases not too much harder to carry and conceal than a large single stack 9mm. So I guess that's what I'll say about that. And of course, for those of you who like revolvers, J-frames can be a real dream to carry, really nice, maybe sometimes a little difficult to shoot, but practice with them. So finally, Matt, you asked about the Ruger LCP2. I think they made great improvements. I couldn't stand the trigger on the original Ruger LCP. And the fact that there's really no sights on the gun. Now, you've heard me talk about it many times. If you're at close distances, and I would say, you know, 4 or 5 yards or less. If you really practice, not having sights is not much of a big deal. But, you know, it's nice to have those sights, especially on those little tiny guns, because they're so hard to shoot. You need the sight radius that they offer. You need the sights because of the lack of sight radius that they have. So the sights are nice on the Ruger LCP2. Trigger really improved. really improved. A lighter trigger pull, a shorter distance of travel, a nice reset that can be felt, and it's distinctive. So I think there's a big difference. Nice texturing, real nice texturing. You know, I remember when I had a Ruger LCP. At first, I had a Kel-Tec P380. And then, of course, Ruger copied them, and Ruger came out with their copy of the Kel-Tec P3AT, if you remember that, folks. And then they came out with the original Ruger LCP. When I would shoot that thing, especially with concealed carry defensive loads, that thing moved around in my hand a lot. The LCP does not move around as much. The new LCP2 does not, because of the nice texturing. And they've made the grip shape a little bit better, I think. And it makes it easier to hold on to and to shoot. Those are both real big deals. So, Matt, thanks again. My voice is, you know, starting to fail me here a little bit. But I'm going to take a little bit of a break, and I'm going to get to the next caller. Stay tuned.
Hey, Bob. It's Brian Galatek here from New Jersey. We've spoken before. Just listened to your podcast on Sunday, April 9th. And I think that one of the main things that I agree with you about is this question of people getting at one another. Here in New Jersey, because we're under so much stress for our Second Amendment constantly being threatened, there's a lot of groups that are working kind of together but kind of against one another to improve things in the Second Amendment situation here. And no one's going out of their way to be nasty to one another, I don't think, but it just seems they're not really working together as well as they might. So I agree with what you were saying, and I'm looking forward to listening to that podcast when I might see one of them. So thanks a lot. Keep doing the podcast. Really enjoy it. And looking forward to maybe meeting you one of these days. Bye for now.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for calling in. He's talking about episode 413, where I kind of talked a little bit about that I think we should stop eating our own. In other words, I think people in the gun community get a little too vicious with each other. And boy, do I wish that, you know, we would take all that energy that people get, that people use criticizing each other in the gun community. Why don't we take that energy and go after the anti-gunners with all that energy? Why don't we start training with all the energy, all the mental energy that we seem to be able to muster to start beating up on other gun owners and beating up on other trainers? That's kind of what I was referring to. And there's a lot of examples. You don't have to look too far to find them. You know, especially on the internet, where everything is true, everybody's a warrior, everybody's an expert, because they have a computer and the internet. So, Scott, thanks for calling in. Okay, folks, don't forget that this episode or this entire podcast is sponsored by Concealment Solutions. ConcealmentSolutions.com. They make great inside-the-waistband holsters, outside-the-waistband holsters, phenomenal belts. Just yesterday, I was wearing my horsehide gun belt that I got from Concealment Solutions because I was in more of a dressed up corporate environment, and I had to tuck my shirt in and put in a pocket 380. So I wore my horsehide gun belt. Hey, it's important, even if you're in a pocket carry, it's important to wear a gun belt, folks. It does give your body the ability to support that pocket gun a little bit better by wearing a gun belt, because you're adding a significant amount of weight to your pocket. Try me on this. See, just try that. Next time you have to tuck in a shirt, guys, you have to tuck in your shirt and you have to pocket carry, or ladies, if you're pocket carrying, wear something. Ladies, if you're the kind of lady that wears a belt, wear something that's going to be like a gun belt or an actual gun belt. Guys, you too. Try it and see what you think. Ben Branham and I are teaching a drill and a skill class. This is something new that we've come up with. It's a 2.5-hour class. in San Antonio. Monday, June 5th, after work, 6 to 8:30 p.m. Here in San Antonio, it's at that time of the year, it's going to be light until about 9. So 2.5 hours, a drill and a skill. We're going to help you improve your draw and put shots on target. Improve your draw and put shots on target. Come train with me and Ben Branham. It's only $50 at a place to shoot here in San Antonio. That includes everything. And even if you don't have a gun yet, but you want to learn more about it, come to that class because there'll be two of us there. One of us can start real basic with people who are relatively new. We've got guns and we've got holsters that we can lend to you. The class is $99 if you use one of our guns and holsters. But if you just want to come and brush up on some skills, you already have a gun and a holster, come on over, shoot with us. It's also going to be a tremendous amount of fun. We're going to shoot some steel. We got some fun things going on. 2.5 hours shouldn't be that much of a commitment of your time. Monday, June 5th, 6 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. And new videos are going up on the Shooters Club. Probably within a day or two after you hear this podcast. Got some more new videos going up there. We try to get them out once a month. Lately, we've been getting out more than one or two videos every month. Thank you. We've had a lot of new signups lately. You're missing out, folks, if you're not a member of our Shooters Club. $8 a month is all it takes. $8 a month. That's nothing, folks. You want to save a little bit of money? Sign up for an entire year. $75 for an entire year. All right, let's get to the interview with Gail Pepin of the Pro Arms Podcast.
A woman is approximately 10 times more likely to be successfully raped when she doesn't have a gun, according to a Department of Justice study. This explains why women in the United States use firearms about 200,000 times a year to stop sexual assaults. It also explains why more than 40% of women own or already have access to a firearm. So why do some politicians want to disarm women? Maybe rape isn't a serious enough crime in their minds. Or maybe they don't want to stare down the wrong end of your barrel.
Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Well, joining me is Gail Pepin from the Pro Arms Podcast and Masada Youth Group. Gail, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Good. This is the first time I've ever had you on the Handgun World Podcast.
I think it is. I saw you at TACCON a couple weeks ago, and I hadn't seen you for a long time. So it's great to reconnect with you.
Well, same to you. I couldn't do a whole lot of traveling to large events there for a while because the doctors were telling me that my immune system was not a good idea to be around large groups of people.
Yeah, well, I've been following you on Facebook, and I'm glad you're so much better and you're able to travel again and get out there and see your old friends.
Exactly, except for today I'm feeling like crap. I got a cold going on. Well, Gail, I wanted to bring you on the show to talk about women's training and some of the positives and negatives of what's offered out there for women, maybe some of the special challenges that ladies go through in getting handgun training. What do you think about that?
Oh, that's a big, big subject, but I think I can talk about that a little bit. There's women's training, quote mark, which is training by women for women, and there's women getting the same training that everybody else is getting. So I kind of break it down into those two main topics. I don't know if anybody knows this, but women are different than men.
That's right. You're right about that. Yes.
We're just kind of generally smaller. Generally, we have smaller hands. Not always. Generally, we have less upper body strength and a lower center of gravity So all those things are just different, but you can make them work for you. You can make pretty much any pistol work. You know, sometimes we get women in the classes that come in and say, oh, I can only shoot this little bitty gun, or I can only shoot a 22. And I'm like, well, you know, let's try something else. And usually by the end of the day, I get them in to shoot one of my 9mm just fine. You know, there's adaptations. The little bitty guns are actually harder to shoot. You know, a lot of women go in and they'll buy, oh, this cute little carry gun because it's purple and it fits in my purse or it's raspberry. And, you know, sometimes gun shops don't steer her away from that. But mm-hmm. really, those little guns are expert guns. It's much, much better to learn on a full-size, duty-size.
So the duty-size handguns end up typically working for women better sometimes, don't they?
Well, for learning, they do. At some point, when you need deep concealment or you need to carry much more discreetly, let's say, those little guns work fine. But for learning, I would get a duty-size gun or like the size of a Glock 19, a compact, not a subcompact, so like Glock 19, Glock 17 size.
Yeah.
Those are the easiest guns to bring to a class. There's nothing wrong with a SIG as a traditional double action. There's nothing wrong with a 1911. There's just more levers and more things to do. And if you're not real familiar with the manual of arms, it's many more things to remember when you're a beginner.
Yeah.
So I think the simpler the gun, for a beginner. No, I assume that's what you're talking about, women just learning how to shoot.
Exactly, because there are a lot of women just learning how to shoot.
Yeah, like a Glock or an M&P, something like that, something that's easy, point and shoot, and full size.
Yeah.
We have to maybe grip the gun a little bit differently. You know, our hands aren't as big, and I like now the guns come with different size back straps. So if you have those small hands, you can have the tiniest backstrap on it or no backstrap at all.
Yeah.
And that kind of has helped a lot of women. Sometimes you have to just twist your hand a little bit to H grip just to get enough finger in the trigger. So there's adaptations to everything. You can make it work.
You can make just about anything work if you're determined.
You can. You can. Another thing is stance. I see a lot of men who teach their wives and say, well, she just can't do this and she just can't do that. And like, if you're a big, strong guy and you're used to muscling the gun and, you know, you just kind of let your upper body take over, that's fine. But if you're a 5-foot-tall, 120-pound woman, that gun packs a lot of recoil. You need to get your – you need to use your body mechanics, get your strength behind it, get your weight behind it, use your whole body, not just your arms, to handle that gun. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a very good point, because us guys, we do have, you know, the ability sometimes to just muscle that gun into place where we want, and most women probably do not.
Probably do not, but if you get the right stance, you get a good grip, you get a good strong stance, you know, and you push it forward. I tell, usually when I teach girls at the range, I'll say, push that gun at the target, push it into the target. Push it ahead, get your body weight behind it, and let your body absorb the recoil, not your arms. And you'll
good
be
point.
A lot more successful if you try doing that.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Gail, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Gail, I wanted to ask you this question because I know you got some experience with this, and I've seen this a lot. I've seen a class of 15 or 20 students, 13 men and 2 women. What's it like being a lady in a class full of men?
Well, I think that's a different experience for different women. You know, there's not all women are the same. I know that's a big revelation too, but you know, when I started out, I shot with a bunch of guys. There were no other women.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, I sought out training. There was, you know, very little training in my area. I was lucky. I found the right person the first time, which when I look back and I hear people's experiences, I was really lucky to find the trainer I found. And I shot with all men, and I wasn't intimidated. But, you know, I was always like that. I was always kind of the tomboy, kind of more comfortable around men, not a girly girl, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather wear jeans than wear a skirt. I don't think I've worn a skirt in probably 30 years. Well, I did wear one for a wedding, but they made me. And, you know, I'm just not a girly girl. So For me, it's not a problem. For I have seen it be a problem for some women. They kind of are overwhelmed. Usually if there's a big class like that and the women come, one or two women are in the class, usually they come with a spouse or a partner or a friend of some sort, either a male friend or a female friend for support, and they kind of try to stick with that person. And that's just a different kind of feeling. You know, I don't know. I'm not like that, so I don't really understand it, but I understand there's women like that. But for that, there's also women's-only classes.
Right.
Around the country, there's a couple of different women's shooting groups. I'm a little more familiar with A Girl and a Gun than any of the other ones, just because I have a lot of friends that are involved with it, the facilitators. And they have wonderful sessions that are, you know, women's shooting only. We just went to TACCON. I saw you there.
Yes.
There was an amazing amount of women there who came by themselves. It was just so heartening that all these women were there and they were ready to learn and they were taking all the classes. I have gone to TACCON for many years now, and every year I see more women. And every year I see more women who come alone or with a girlfriend. So that's very encouraging. There were women's classes there. There was one day where there was just one women's class after another.
Yeah.
And it was great. There was one brave man who was in that women's class.
Really?
Yeah, there was. And Lynn Givens taught a class, and there was one man in that class, and it was just awesome. And he just, you know, he took class with everybody else. It was great.
That was, now that women's class, wasn't there like 25 or 30 ladies in it?
Yeah, it was a big class. It was a real big class. I didn't participate in the class. I went and took pictures of the class and kind of hung out and schmoozed, stand there and talked to Vicki Farnham, because who also teaches an excellent class for women only. So I think most of Lynn's classes are in conjunction with Range Masters, so they're co-ed classes. But Vicki does teach some uniquely female-only classes.
Yeah, TACCON was a great experience. I noticed you didn't participate in the jiu-jitsu class.
I did not. I'm too old for that shit.
Oh, man. You know what? So am I. I had to load up on some Tylenol after that jiu-jitsu class.
Yeah, I took pictures of that class. So, I enjoyed it vicariously, looking at all you guys rolling around in the dirt.
Well, Gail, you know, do ladies, when they show up at a class, I think I've seen you and Mass do this, and I know that other trainers do it. If a lady comes and she's coming like with her boyfriend or husband or significant other, Do you typically recommend, or do you try to separate the two and kind of have them on different ends of the firing line?
Generally, we do, but not always. You have to read your student. I had a couple of times I've noticed that there's some women who just don't do well without their support person right there with them.
Yeah.
And if he's not overwhelming her and being too helpful, we'll let them stay together. And if they're a couple who's a very competent shooting couple, I had a couple in Illinois who came, and I split them up because they seemed to be depending on each other a little too much. And I split them up, and the girl took me aside and talked to me, and it turns out that she was a daughter of a friend, and she was a very competent shooter, and they weren't over-helping each other. They were just talking. I put them back together because they worked well together. So it's not always that way. I also have a friend who won't learn from anybody but her husband.
Oh, really?
And yeah. And so you can't, people like that, you kind of got to leave them together. But 99 times out of 100, yes, I would separate them.
In that case, just get the husband up to speed.
Yeah. And a lot of times, the woman beats the man in the final qualification.
No kidding.
In the last year, we have had at least two women I can think of off the top of my head be top shot in our classes.
Why do you think that is?
Because I think more and more women are getting training and more women are getting better.
Yeah.
And I see we don't get as many beginning women as we used to. We get more intermediate to advanced women in our classes,
yeah,
which is very encouraging. So these girls came in high speed, and they kicked butt, and they won. And it was awesome.
Well, what advice would you give to ladies that are just getting started? Maybe they just got their concealed carry license, and they really don't know what's the next step to take.
Well, yeah, ladies and men, a lot of times they get your concealed carry license, and, like, they think, now I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I need. This is what the minimum I need, and now I know what I need to know. Well, you know, you don't know. Getting your concealed carry license is step one. There's mm-hmm. a lot more to learn. You don't really even know what you don't know. There's so much involved. You know, I don't know if I'm talking about TACCON again, and this kind of ties into TACCON and our podcast. Carl Wren was there from KR Training in Texas.
Great class.
Did you take that class?
I took the class. It was great. It was great.
Beyond the 1%. And he talked about just that, how people... He talked about the Dunning-Kruger effect, and I'm sure you all listeners are familiar with that. It's when you get a little bit of knowledge and you think you know so much, but you really don't. And that's where a lot of these people, he called it, I think, the peak of Mount Stupid.
Yes. I listened to that podcast when you had him on your show. The peak of Mount Stupid. That is interesting. And a lot of them don't know they're standing on that peak.
No, they don't know. And the more you go, the more wisdom, the more knowledge you get, the more you realize, oh, my God, I didn't know, really, what I didn't know.
Yeah.
I had no idea. So, yeah, that's our most recent podcast. I'm going to give it a plug at proarmspodcast.com.
There you go. Always give it a plug. That's great.
And Carl did an excellent presentation, and he put it on his blog in 8 parts. So anybody who's interested, it's mostly aimed at trainers and how to increase enrollment in their classes.
Yeah, it was very good.
The word there, but it was very good. It's good for anybody to read that. But yeah, getting people to go beyond that first step—that is the challenge, and that's kind of our job, to encourage people to do that, because there's so much more. And you know, it's fun when you get out there and you train and you meet so many nice people. You know, I've met very few people that I wouldn't say are the best people on earth in the shooting sports. I really do, especially you go to conferences like Rangemaster and different things.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody's wonderful. Everybody's so helpful and supportive. It's just a great community.
A lot of people don't realize how good of a community it is.
I don't think they do, because we're kind of painted with a negative paintbrush, like in the mainstream media, the gun people are bad, the gun people are evil, but they're not. They're really nice. And we have a great time at these things. And, you know, you make friends all over the country, all over the world, actually, because sometimes people come from different countries to go to these things. So getting training is not only educational, training is fun. So I wish people would realize that.
You know, I think that's probably my biggest takeaway from Carl Wren's class, is he talked about making it fun for people. And that's okay. I think that's incredibly important. It's, you know, we all like to do things that are fun, don't we?
We do. But if you do things, how about appropriate fun? You know, I don't think most people need to go out breaching walls and boarding ships and doing, you know, all this crazy stuff, all this tactical stuff that they have at these classes. You know, that stuff might be fun, but it's not real practice. It's not what you need in your real life. Look for good practical training from, you know, a reputable trainer. And the internet for that is a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good thing because, you know, the trainers get their messages out there. It's a bad thing because on the internet, everybody looks the same. It's hard to know who is an instructor with 10, 20, 30 years experience and who is some dork sitting in his mom's basement espousing bullshit. You know,
and there are a lot of those, too.
They all kind of look the same on the internet. It's really hard to go through that, to sort through that. Yeah, do your due diligence and... you know, look at what the main people are saying, and kind of, it's kind of easy to fall into who's doing the right things, what I'm trying to say, by doing a little research.
Yeah, and you can, if you do a little research, especially like just talking to other students who have maybe taken that class before, you'll get some pretty honest feedback that way.
Yeah, you know, you're not going to be a Navy SEAL, but you might be a mom. Look for a class. There's an armed parent class taught by Melody Lauer, which is awesome. You know, and that's not well known, but it should be. And now a lot of people talk about, you know, what do you do with your pistol when you have your toddler with you? Well, there's a class for that, and it's competent, excellent training.
Yeah, that sounds like a class that is really interesting for some ladies. What do you do when you got a toddler with you? Or even a dad, if they're a stay-at-home dad and they want to carry, you know, and they've got young kids with them, what do they do?
Right, right.
Very interesting. Gail, what do you tell ladies that want to purse carry? Are you in favor of that, against that, or in between? What are your feelings on that?
In general, I don't think purse carry is a very good idea. There are those circumstances where you may have to do it, but it shouldn't be your primary mode of carry. If the pistol's not on your body, you don't have control of it. And if it's in your purse, you don't have control of it. If a bad guy's coming up behind you, what's the first thing he's going to do? He's going to grab your purse. That's what he wants to steal.
That's what he's going after.
Then you gave him a gun. So you don't want to do that. You want it on your body where you can access at all times, where it's only accessible by you. Because if you got little kids especially, you know how fast they are. You just can't trust them around a purse carrying.
Yeah.
And the worst thing I've seen, there's was it SHOT Show? I think it was the year before, not this year, last year. And there was a woman there who came up with she called it a purse hook. And it was a hook that you hooked on the passenger seat of your car on the headrest to hook your purse on that seat so you had ready access to your gun.
Really?
The passenger seat. Now, that made sense to her, but when I saw that, it's like, oh, my God, that's right there saying to a smash and grab, smash my window, here's my purse. Then they got your purse and your gun right there.
And it's out in plain view, isn't it?
In plain view. It holds it right there in plain view. And it doesn't lock it on. It's just a hook. So, you know, you're stopped at a light. How common are smash and grab robberies? Very, very common.
Oh,
you're
absolutely.
Stopped at a light. Bad guy sees your purse sitting there on display with the straps hanging up. Smash your window, take your purse, and you get your purse and your gun. What a horribly dumb idea. So, yeah, clearly I don't like purse carry.
Well, I'm glad you weighed in on that because I see it so much, and I teach the Texas License to Carry course occasionally. I don't do too many of them anymore. And that's always what the ladies want to do. They want to put it in their purse.
Well, I think I would probably strongly encourage them not to do that for just those reasons. That's what they're going to steal from you. They're going to steal your purse. And then what are you going to do? You're going to fight over it and tug on it. And, you know, then you can't get the gun out when you're doing that.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
So for on-body carry, then, what do you recommend ladies do?
There's a lot of... there's so many ways to carry. You know, some women like inside the waistband. I don't like it for myself. You know, a lot of women are, if you're shaped like a girl, if you're not straight up and down,
yeah,
you really need to get the right kind of holster. The holster that works for guys isn't going to work for a woman. A lot of my friends appendix carry. A lot of my friends carry in belly bands.
Yeah.
Which there's some really nice belly bands out there. Now you got to do your shopping around. There's one out there that's this giant long piece of lace that you wrap around yourself and wrap around your gun. That is an incredibly bad idea also. I know I'm not going to make any friends here with these people who sell this stuff, but it's crap, and it's dangerous crap. You know, it's a piece of lace. It doesn't cover the trigger.
Oh, that's not good.
No. I mean, it covers the trigger, but not, you can get your finger right in there and accidentally pull the trigger. And in order to grab the gun, you got to dig for it because it's under this big old piece of lace. terribly bad.
That's not good.
Really dangerous way to do it. I asked a friend of mine, another girl who carries and shoots, I said, what do you think of this? It's called lethal lace. So what do you think of this lethal lace? And she said to me, I think it's appropriately named.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
So you really got to stay away from this stuff that's just borderline and just not safe. You know, that's another phenomenon in the women's carry world, I want to call it, that, you know, a lot of women, they've taken their first gun class and, oh, I can't find anything, any good way to carry, so I'm going to invent something. But they invent something that's terribly, terribly dangerous and terribly wrong. I see things, you know, like with the retention strap, like in the wrong places. It's supposed to go over the slide, not over the trigger guard, like a lot of these newly designed, newly discovered people are designing. You know, just be very careful. Go with the tried and true. The stuff, that stuff's been around for a reason because it works and it's safe.
Yeah, exactly. And
I got off the rails there, didn't I?
No, that's okay. But that's our, well, it's, even though you got off the rails a little bit, it was good stuff because, you know, I'm glad you brought up the point about people inventing stuff. Just because somebody invented something that sounds cool, looks cool, seems like it might work and be practical, you really got to look at the safety aspect of it, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for example, you want to hear another example?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but you got me on a roll now.
Okay.
I went to the SHOT Show this year, and up in the new product section, first, you know, I go to this booth, and first thing you see are the models with the big fake boobs. Well, you know, nobody does that anymore, so that was kind of a sign, like, who are these guys? You know, what are they trying to do? So they've got this product, and they'll make your gun, okay, we'll use a Glock for example because that's what they had out there. They'll make your gun as small as an iPhone, like an iPhone, like a 6 Plus or a 7 Plus,
mm-hmm.
by cutting down they have a special magazine. They cut down the body of the gun, and they cut off the trigger guard. And then they put this little thing on there that a magazine sits in.
Wait a minute. You said they cut off the trigger guard?
They cut off the trigger guard to put this magazine thing on there. And look, this is so cool. We made it tiny.
Oh,
oh no, you made it friggin' ridiculously dangerous. That's what you did.
Wow. That was at SHOT Show?
Yeah, at SHOT Show. It was a new product section. I hope they never, ever come back. I hope that enough people gave them negative feedback that they know what they made was a terribly, terribly bad idea.
Who's the person in charge at SHOT Show of evaluating new products?
I don't know if they evaluate them.
Wow.
I don't know. You know, SHOT Show is run by the National Shooting Sports Foundation, but I don't know if they evaluate new products. They always have one section, the new product showcase, where the first-time displayers can go. I don't know what the criteria is to get a booth there, but boy, these guys, this is horrible.
Was that supposed to be geared towards women?
I don't know who that was. No, because they had the big fake booby models.
Oh, that's right. I guess it would be geared towards
men.
Yeah, it was geared towards men. Wow.
Yeah. But,
okay.
It was bad. But
well.
Yeah, I'm off the rails.
No, that's okay. That's okay. So one last quick question, and then I want you to promote some of the stuff that you and Mass are doing. What types of holsters or holster recommendations can you give to ladies that do choose to carry on the body? Are there any favorites that you have that you really like?
I like the Flashbang brand of belt holsters.
Yeah.
I have nothing wrong, nothing against the bra holsters. I just don't use them myself. I have one, and I just haven't really used it. But I have the belt holsters that they make, and I love their belt holsters.
The Flashbang makes.
The Flashbang or Looper Leather.
Uh-huh.
And they make really good holsters. I've got, most of the time I'm carrying either in that holster or an Acre holster that I kind of appropriated from Mass. just a plain old belt slide holster. You need to look for a holster that's going to fit your body. You need one that's cut lower. A lot of the holsters are cut really, really high. And for women, they need to be down lower than they do for men. So get something that's just lower. So, because we have a shorter torso. So a lot of those high male holsters, the gun's up in your armpit if you're carrying it.
Oh, now I see what you mean. So a holster that rides lower when it's on your belt.
Rides lower on your belt.
Okay.
So you kind of have to shop around to get that. A lot of women I know like to appendix carry.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Keeper's Concealment is the one they use. You know, Melody Lauer showed me a new one this year that she has called the Runcible Holster.
The what holster?
Like Runcible.
Runcible, okay.
Is that the right word? And it's like a Kydex holster with, instead of a big heavy band around it, just some elastic straps.
Mm-hmm.
Carrying the appendix position. She raved about it, but I think it's like just one guy making them, so I think there's quite a long wait for them.
You know, I've found oftentimes, though, when you have to wait a long time, you're usually waiting for real good quality.
Right. It's usually worth it. There's a reason why there's a real long line.
That's exactly right. Usually that's the way it is. And you could buy something to get you by, something that's safe and not ridiculous, that'll get you by until your good holster comes.
Yeah, there's some nice belly bands out there. I would shop around for which one suited you best.
Okay.
That doesn't have that crazy strap that I was telling you about in the wrong place.
Yeah.
That's also, those holsters that are just supposed to stick to you, you know, there's no loops or anything. They just stick inside your pants. Those
like
are
a,
sort of a bad idea.
Like a sticky holster or remora holster?
Right, those. A lot of women use those. I would not recommend that because it's not secure. And unlike men, every time we go to the bathroom, we have to drop our pants.
Uh-huh.
So every time you drop your pants, you have to be handling that pistol. And then where do you put it?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how pistols get left in the bathroom.
Yeah,
so,
you know,
on your body and really is on your body, not floating around on your body.
Amazing when I hear that lots of people leave their holsters. I mean, not their holsters. They leave their guns in the bathroom. I'm like, seriously? Wow, that's just amazing.
In the news today, there was a federal air marshal who left a gun in the bathroom.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It shouldn't be coming off. There's no reason to take it off.
Yeah, that's right. If you
be loose, you know, if you have the right kind of holster, it's not going to come off.
No, it's not. It's not. Well, I got to wrap this up soon, but talk about what you and Masada you are doing. You're taking a trip next week.
Oh, next week we're going to the NRA convention, and Mass will be speaking at the law seminar, which is on Friday. The seminar's all day Friday. I'm not quite sure what time he's talking. But like I said, it's also the day Trump's going to be there. So I don't know.
You and I were talking about that a little bit offline. Mm-hmm. Atlanta's going to be a circus the day that Trump's in town.
Atlanta's going to be a mess because they have all kinds of traffic issues. I mean, they normally have bad traffic, but with two major highways in disrepair, it's going to be worse. And the president in town, it's going to be worse than ever. But it's going to be fun.
So he's speaking at the law seminar.
At the law seminar. He'll be in the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network booth Saturday and Sunday from noon till 2.
Good.
And he'll be there with Marty and Gila and whoever else pops in, because lots of people pop into that booth. It's always a good time.
Yeah. And you're not going to GRPC this year?
Mass is not. I might be going to AmCon.
Yeah, you're going.
AmCon is at AmCon.org. AmCon is a first time we're going to have this. It's a mini convention, I guess we call it, one day for podcasters, YouTubers, bloggers, kind of focusing on podcasters. And that's going to be Friday, September 29th in Irving, Texas. It's going to be the day before the Gun Rights Policy Conference, and Second Amendment Foundation is helping us with this a lot.
Yeah, those of us in podcasting and in radio, we're going to be learning new and exciting ways to bring you good content.
We are. So, okay, and the class, I skipped around then. And after the NRA, we're having a class in Ohio with Paul Carlson at Safety Solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a couple openings still in that class. That would be...
It's a Mag 40 class, right?
It's a Mag 40 class, and that's going to be May 4th through 7th.
Okay.
In Garrettsville, Ohio. So, and that's at our website, MasadaUGroup.com.
Good stuff coming up.
Good stuff.
I'm really disappointed I'm going to miss the NRA show, but I'll catch that one next year.
I'll miss seeing you. And our podcast is back up, and we're going every other week again like we used to. And I want my listeners back. So you guys, go back and subscribe to the Pro Arms Podcast if you unsubscribed. We're still there on iTunes. We're still everywhere we were. And we've had some good episodes lately. I'm going to be good for a while and try to do it every other week. Got some good ones coming up.
I got to say something about that. I have to say something about that. To the listeners who have never listened to the Pro Arms Podcast, you just simply have to. The Pro Arms Podcast, it's one of the absolute best out there. If you used to listen and you've kind of dropped off, like Gail is saying, get back into it, because your last several episodes, I've listened to the last five or six. They've been outstanding.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we try to do stuff that not everybody does.
You do. You do things that are not done out there.
We try to talk to gunfight survivors. We try to talk to, working and retired police officers. We talk to the former Surgeon General of the United States. That was one of my favorite podcasts.
That was a great
show. Dr. Rich Carmona.
Uh-huh.
And as he was a SWAT medic and off duty one day. And he's a surgeon. He's an MD. He's an awesome man. He was down the street, came upon a bad incident. It was a car accident that turned out to be an armed encounter with a bad guy. That was an excellent one. And we've had George Zimmerman on there.
Twice.
Yeah, twice. And, I don't think anybody else has had him on. Maybe Mark Walters had him on for a short time.
Yeah.
And, we do a few gun reviews. We talked about the new Rugers. We kind of just try to mix it up, but we try to not sound like all the other... I don't want to say you, but many of the other podcasts.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
Many of the podcasts are interviewing the same people all the time.
Well, and the good thing about your podcast is that, you talk about interviewing the same people all the time. You and Mass have so many connections out there with so many people that you really do interview and talk to people with stories that you can't find that stuff anywhere else.
Yeah, one of the great ones we did most recently, too, was Dennis Anderson. And he's the guy, most police officers would know who he was. He was the one who wrote the three books, the Street Survival books, those black and white books in the 70s. And he did those early, early films for Motorola, the police training films. I mean, that's the beginnings of the police survival movement. And I know police survival is probably not a popular topic anymore, but he talks about the roots of that and where that came from.
Well, it should be a popular topic.
The mainstream media.
Yeah, it should be. You know what? One of my favorite episodes that you've done at the Pro Arms Podcast, about a couple years ago when you interviewed Officer Tim Grammons in Skokie.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was unbelievable. It's episode 90. I'm looking at it right now. If you haven't listened to that one, that's a must listen, especially if you're one of those people that likes to analyze and have all those stupid caliber arguments.
Yeah, Tim Grammons was carrying a .45 and he hit that guy, I think it was... 14 rounds. Actually, 17 times. 14 rounds, and the guy didn't go down.
Unbelievable.
And the last three shots were headshots, and he finally went down. They were well-aimed headshots.
Yeah.
And finally, and this was just a bad dude. There was no drugs in the system, so you guys would say, oh, he's all drugged up. Not a drug in his system. He was clean. He was just a bad dude, and he wasn't going to give up. Because, you may have the will to survive, but so does he.
Exactly. Good words of wisdom. Gail, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And, sorry about the technical difficulties, but I'm going to do some good fancy editing.
That's okay. Happy editing to you. I feel your pain.
Well, Gail, thank you very much, and you have a good rest of the weekend.
Thanks, Bob. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, thank you, Gail. I appreciate you giving me your time. I enjoyed that a lot. I hope you did, too. I made a mistake when I talked about the class, the drill and a skill, 6 to 8:30 p.m. I think I said 8:30 a.m. Sorry about that. No, we're not going to shoot all night. Hey, wouldn't that be kind of fun? It's 6 to 8:30 p.m. Well, Gail did a great job on this. You know, a couple weeks ago, I had Cheryl Todd, and I wanted her to talk about women and concealed carry. This week, I played this interview for you because I wanted Gail Pepin to kind of put in her two cents. You know, she's quite experienced, and I thought that she would have some real good stuff to say about it for you ladies out there that are carrying. I even learned some good things. You know, just listening to both of these women talk about the concealed carry world and things like that. Again, Gail Pepin, if you have not listened to their podcast, Pro Arms Podcast, wow, do they have some good stuff on that. It's part of the Masada Yub group, and good stuff. The interviews that they get over there are outstanding. So once again, Gail, thanks. I'm looking forward to seeing you at AmCon. That's the gathering of podcasters and alternative media people that are going to be getting together the day before the Gun Rights Policy Conference in Dallas. Hey, my Amazon store is going pretty well. So thank you for using that. If you want to support my show financially, but you don't want to have to spend any extra money to do so, for several years I've had an Amazon store. All you have to do is make your Amazon purchases by going through my store first. All this stuff I'm talking about can all be found at handgunworld.com. Okay, I'm switching to every 2 weeks now. I wanted you to hear these three interviews, and then now I'm going to shift to every 2 weeks. So 2 weeks from today. So let's see, this podcast is coming out on May 7th. So I guess that's going to be the 21st of May. Be the next podcast that you'll be able to listen to. It's going to fit my schedule better. The episodes might be maybe a little bit longer than my typical 1 hour, but probably not. I don't, you know, my attention span isn't much longer than an hour. I have a real hard time listening to something, especially the same hosts, for about more than an hour. There are podcasts out there that are an hour and a half to 2 hours. Some are even 2.5 hours. And I understand that, you know, you can stop and pause it anytime you want and come back to it and things like that. But that's just not my style too much. I don't get into that much. So I like to keep this to an hour or less, and it's going to be every other Sunday morning. With all that said, I'm Bob Main. I'm going to take a little rest, drink some water, have a little bit more medicine, try to finally, once and for all, shake off this nasty case of bronchitis, flu, virus, something that I've picked up, and hopefully I'll come back fresh, real fresh, in a couple of weeks. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Thank you, Paul Carlson, for telling me that. It's the first time I ever heard that. Shoot straight, folks. Shoot safe. And I'll catch you in 2 weeks. So blind. Goodbye. Good.